And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
Happy Thanksgiving, Bills fans. Welcome to the broadcast. We're almost set to go. The Buffalo Bills and the New Orleans Saints. Many Bills players kept repeating the phrase, "That's not who we are," referring to the Colts loss, which leads me to ask you, who do you think the Bills are? Snap, pass by Josh, complete left side, goes into the end zone, touchdown Buffalo. It is Dawson Knox, touchdown Buffalo. A 6-yard toss from Josh Allen to Dawson Knox. The Bills score first. Takes the handoff, back to throw, fires to the end zone. It is caught in the end zone, touchdown Buffalo. Stephon Diggs. A 5-yard touchdown catch from Josh Allen. Josh fakes a handoff, sets up the throw, got a man wide open, caught at the 14-yard line. Dawson Knox inside the 5, headed to the end zone, touchdown Buffalo on 4th and 2. There it is. Josh fires a short one. This one caught. And it is Matt Breida who gets a good block at the 10 to the 5, touchdown. Matt Breida, touchdown Buffalo. And the snap. Simeon back to pass, looking downfield, and it's picked off. Picked off at the 40-yard line, intercepted by Jordan Poyer. Cuts to the middle, and he goes down at the 44-yard line of the New Orleans Saints.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Have a good one.
All right, that is your Toshiba Game Rewind, brought to you by Toshiba, the official copier company of the Buffalo Bills, here on a Buffalo Football Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, and the day after a resounding 31-6 stomping of the injury-ravaged New Orleans Saints, as their offense barely had enough people to put on the field, Steve. Yeah. First of all, you have a good Thanksgiving. Everybody packed into the house. And
I sure did. Had a quiet adult Thanksgiving. Mm. All the grandkids were at the end. My son's wives' parents. They all went to the other, the other side of the family for Thanksgiving. And then last night, most of them converged on our house for a watch party for the
dessert
game.
And some
of the kids, like half the kids, stayed at our house overnight and all that. So I had to escape this morning.
Later. I was proud of myself. I did not do dessert round 2, which I was kind of. I was mapping it out. I was like, all right, well, I got to get to work at about 8, so let me have dessert before that.
Right.
And if I'm feeling good, then, dessert round 2 at halftime.
Take another swing at it. Yeah, I got.
But it was not in the cards for me. I was very happy with my first. I took a generous slice of Dutch apple pie and went scooping a half of the vanilla on top of that. So I was good after that.
I'm a big fan. If I'm feeling it, like if I don't overeat the meal and you got a chance to really hit it hard for the desserts, what I do is I'll take a little bit of the stuff I know I'll probably like, and then
I
go back and hit hard the one that's like hitting the spot. I go back and say, yeah, that's it.
Oh,
boom.
Okay. So you do like a sampler platter.
I do a sampler, and then I go back and take the full advantage of what anybody didn't eat. Yeah, that's my kind of go-to.
That is very strategic.
I
like that.
Yeah, so we're having since the kids were at their in-laws yesterday, we're having the big thing at our house this afternoon.
Oh.
Only we're not going to go back to the turkey. We're doing actually more of a cow meal.
My wife said you'll be happy to know that we did have a little bit of ham there.
Oh, there you go.
See, I know.
See, Brownie, you can go outside your comfort zone and have.
Well, I like ham. It's the rest of my family that doesn't. So I had some ham on my plate.
You need to do that.
You know, we got like one of those, like pre-cooked couple of slices, and they have them vacuum sealed. Literally, you throw that thing in a skillet, sear it on both sides for about 3 minutes. Done.
Right.
Because it's pre-cooked.
That almost doesn't even count, bro sleeve.
It tasted
out. You got to get one of those. See, you got to get one of those like 15-pound bone-in spiral cut.
No, we do that. We usually have those for Christmas time.
Yeah, you got to put that in, and
but it's
so
never
you have
there
like,
on Thanksgiving.
You have to like throw half of it away because you're like you can't eat any more of it.
Yeah.
Like after 6 weeks, it's still in there. You forget it's in there.
It's like, I can't do anymore.
That is so good.
Get your sodium for the month.
That is so good,
get your sodium for the month.
Oh, my gosh. It was so, I'm like everybody else. I mean, who doesn't like to eat? Everybody
sucking down water.
So good. Oh, my gosh. Oh, like, yeah, about 45 minutes after you finish eating, you got to go drink like a half a gallon of water. Yeah. Like, oh, my gosh, I'm so, so thirsty.
I made the stuffing. I made the Brussels sprouts, which I make with bacon, honey, and some garlic.
And I don't want to let, you know, I'm not too much, you know, I don't, I'm not an extra big exerciser, right? I mean, I quit working out when I quit playing, right? I'm
outside of walking
without,
the golf course.
I didn't step on the scale this morning, but I am absolutely positively at this moment, you're sitting here looking at me, the heaviest weight I've ever been in my entire
wow.
life.
Wow. Just because of what you consumed yesterday?
I hate myself. But yes, I'm almost positive I am the heaviest I have ever been in my entire life.
Yeah.
We headed into the winter.
Oh yeah, well you got to layer yeah. up.
I didn't
that's,
even.
That's
yeah,
your
I
layering.
We had the outdoor TV going. We were outside last night, you know, for the game, watching the game on TV out, you know, because I had a cigar, I have my cigar thing going. So I'm out of shape and I smoke cigars. And we were, you know, so I didn't even need to bundle up. I got a little layer of fat on
there
me.
You
I'm
go.
Just so
yeah,
fat.
You are ready
I'm
for the winter.
Fat and happy right now. 31-6 fat and happy.
That's right. 31-6 was the final score indeed. And I think we both had an inkling it had a very good chance to go this way because of how shorthanded the Saints were.
Kamara was out.
And
our little
Mark
idea.
Ingram was out.
So was Taysom Hill. That was a surprise to me.
Starting right tackle, Ryan Ramczyk, who's one of the highest paid tackles in the league.
Yeah.
He was out.
Yep.
His backup was out. I mean,
it kind of turns into
two of their top three defensive ends were out.
If you get past the glow of a big win, it's a little bit of a hollow victory because you'd almost be full of anxiety if the Bills had won it in overtime. You know what I mean? Because to beat a team that was so downtrodden, Trevor Siemian, I'll tell you that I didn't think he played horribly, but he just missed. Some crucial, just consistently just one throw off on a series or something like that. And they got to, you know, get a penalty or whatever. Their running game did not have its way with the Bills, as you might imagine, without Ingram or Alvin Kamara.
Right.
So I'm a little bit of a hollow victory, even in 31-6 defeat.
Ed Oliver continues to impress. I think he's had a nice stretch of games here the last few weeks. He's been one of the few bright spots through this up-and-down stretch of Buffalo's schedule. He's played really well. He was a factor again last night. Mario Addison was his wingman. Those two guys were difference makers up front last night, the most notable by far.
I'll tell you, Ed, there's something about Ed that to me, like last night he said he almost had to play the game for free because he bought so many tickets.
Well, and he put his mom in a suite.
Right. Well,
so he's like,
go.
I basically played for free.
Right.
Last night.
So,
but he was a force.
Somebody should do their best to make sure Ed has to do that every week, right? I mean, if that, because man, oh man.
Well, he played really good on Thanksgiving in Dallas because he's got family there, and he played really good last night because he's got family there.
Ed flipped. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Ed flipped the switch last night.
We got to get his mom on the road.
Right. Here. We got to, right? So, you know, put
Mom's
out
at the game
GoFundMe page, get his mom in the stands. Because, man, he turns it on for mom.
He was knifing into the backfield.
He was just.
With alarming regularity.
Now, I get it. Their offensive line was a little bit of a mess. In fact, on the 4th-and-2 conversion, their left tackle never moved. I mean, he didn't even. The snap count
him
was all messed up.
A couple other guys.
Up. It was they were a mess at times, and it was at crucial points as well. I mean, yeah, so Ed was really good last night. He really was.
Yeah. And, so was Addison. Addison was a
Mario was
as
very
well.
Good. You know who else was really good last night? Tremaine Edmonds.
I was going to say it, yep.
Tremaine Edmonds.
Made a difference.
That guy was.
Made a difference. You don't appreciate his range until he's not in there.
Yeah, and plus, he's fresh.
Well, right.
Fresh off the shelf. So, Tremaine, you got to tip your hat to him. He made a difference.
Played a nice
in the
game.
Run game, too.
Oh, yeah.
That was great. It was good to see him back.
What about your thoughts on the whole return game development?
Yeah.
Marquez Stevenson is brought. Now, let's just think about this for a second.
Yeah, let's rehash this.
The lengths that the coaching staff went to make a change there. You got Marquez Stevenson on IR since the beginning of the season with a foot injury. Short week. He's activated off IR and is practiced. Well, no, he started practicing with the team, but we're talking about walkthrough stuff. They're not practicing full speed this week. They're just trying to rest bodies.
Right.
So this guy hasn't played in a regular season game in his entire career. He's a rookie. Hasn't played in a regular season game. They start practicing him. They activate him off IR yesterday or Wednesday before 4 p.m. And then he is the primary return man in the game. In a game you need to have, despite not having any NFL regular season experience. On top of that, Isaiah McKenzie is inactive.
Yeah, like you don't have a safety net.
What are we to pull from all of that?
Well, I think Isaiah it was as much about Isaiah McKenzie as it was about Marquez.
Okay.
And I'll say that I've said it before. I did it. I mean, I returned punts for NNF, you know, when I was playing. There is no more pressure-packed job on the field than the punt returner, because you got guys like me coming down, and I know how I used to feel about covering kicks, and guys that I played with, you know, Carwell and Chris Hale and Mark Pike and the gang going down to cover kicks. I mean, that was – you were hoping that guy returned it because you wanted a shot at him. You'd be standing on the sidelines, right? And to be that guy down there, knowing the guys coming down have got that on their mind, and they're
looking to knock your block off,
and the whole team could be playing gangbusters. Your whole team could be playing like gangbusters. You could lose the game on that play. You always feel like that. You like Isaiah McKenzie coughing the kickoff up last week. You could be
that
guy.
The game was over.
Yeah, that's always the pressure you're on. Plus, you've got to make some really critical decisions, not only for the team, for field position. And for your health, you got to make the right decisions, and you got like no time to do it. And you're under the most amount of stress as anybody on the field. You just don't know where they are. You can't take your eyes off the ball. You got to feel where they – I mean, there's just so much going on. That's why Andre Roberts last year and has been a Pro Bowl returner. The guy just makes great decisions. It's hard, man. And to have Marquez Stevenson come out and do as good a job as he did last night, right out of the package – I mean, they just unwrapped him last night. No break-in period. No, like, it's like a pot and pan. Even in pots and pans, you got to condition before you use them in the stove, right? I mean, nothing. Right. That guy was still shiny out of the box.
Fresh out of the box.
And he did a really nice job for them last night.
First two punt returns of the game, plus 11, plus 10.
That's it. That's
and
a first down.
I know you always say that's one less first down your offense has to get coming out on the field. So, good job there. He did drop one, but recovered it.
He dropped it because there was a guy right in his face. Got the gunner got a little bit too close to him, allowed the guy to push him in there a little too close. But he picked it up, showed good poise. And, man, you can't say enough about it. It was a nice night for him.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see going forward what happens.
Yeah.
Now, I've said, too, McKenzie is a guy that's kind of disappeared from the offense now that he's been doing the full-time. And he does some.
Right.
He takes not even a handful of snaps a game on offense. But now if you've got Marquez, maybe McKenzie's able to be a bigger part of it. But I don't know where that leaves your roster.
Yeah, we'll have to see where it goes, because now you've got seven players on your roster who are wide receivers. Now, it's not completely unheard of, but it is in the minority in this league. And so it begs the question, knowing that Star Latulele and Spencer Brown are still on the COVID reserve list, are they anticipating one of those players is going to be on there for an extended period of time? That's the only reason you had the extra roster spot,
right,
to call Stevenson up off of IR and activate him. We also saw the Bills activate two defensive tackles as practice squad call-ups yesterday. Those guys were in on the third series of the game, first and 10.
Yeah,
Eli Onku and Brandon Bryant.
Yeah,
they were in the rotation.
Yeah,
it's not like they were played sparingly. They were in the rotation last night.
I mean,
we're only speculating here. We don't know what the situation is, but when you see a seventh receiver get added to the roster, all right, maybe it's a one game thing. Who knows? But you got seven receivers on the roster now because you have extra room. But what are you doing there? Is it I hope it's not because, one of these guys is struggling with the COVID stuff. I mean, we saw it firsthand last year. Tommy Sweeney
missed
his entire season, suffered from myocarditis.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't right for months.
Right. Yeah, maybe that's what Spencer Brown and Starlou Tulele are going through. I don't know.
Hopefully they're all right.
But the simple fact of the matter is they've got – it's unique. I don't know. Maybe there's another team that does it like this that I don't know. Maybe Miami. I can see Brian Flores being this kind of guy. But Sean McDermott, and his staff, they are not afraid to make stark changes.
Unapologetic.
Unapologetic changes to key spots that other teams just seem unwilling to do.
In the middle of a season.
In the middle of a season.
Now, or in week
and
two.
And I get this, too. I get this. Last week was an embarrassment for the staff, for the players, for the organization. Indianapolis absolutely tore their heads off and handed it back to them. I mean, they just said, thanks for showing up and patted them on the behind as they sent them home. I mean, they embarrassed them. So the coaching staff is not going to sit there and say, everybody's saying, hey, we're not going to pay. But the coaching staff's saying, hey, do better. And it's time to make a change. We're not waiting on you guys to correct it. We're going to get a guy in here to give us a chance.
They made an example of Isaiah McKenzie. I mean, they did.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about that.
Think about the guys down inside, too. They got we're activating some guys. You're getting less reps because we're getting somebody else a chance up front on defense. Yeah. Let's see what you got here.
Who wants to play physical?
Yeah.
It was basically that message.
Yeah. And so I'm all about it. It's courageous, and it sends a lasting and constant message to the roster about, listen, you better show up on Sunday, you better show up on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Let's not forget, Mitch Moore sat down for an extra week last year when he didn't have to.
Because somebody was playing pretty good. I'm totally with you.
Will not hesitate.
One thing, too, that we got to talk about is Tre'Davious White.
Yeah, suffers a knee injury, non-contact, his foot twisted in the turf.
And then his knee bent in.
Yeah, and I've seen these before. When you have high impact, tweaks of the knee. I remember J.P. Lossman had a similar injury to that, and his leg did almost the same thing. Vince Wilfork came in. It was a dirty hit. It was a contact injury. I'm really, I don't know which kind of injury it is, but when you see those guys, the knee kind of grinds down on the lower leg like that and it buckles, sometimes you see MCL sprains there or tears.
Yeah, you thought it was his ankle when it first happened,
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, we're going to have to wait and see. It'll be, he's got 11 days to get back in the saddle. And I know this too, if he's not ready, they won't play him. They'll go with Dane Jackson, Cam Lewis, and the group,
right.
Levi. That'll change their philosophy, though, defensively. There's no question about it.
Yeah,
Tre'Davious is a difference maker.
Yeah, felt terrible for him because it was the first time he was playing in the Louisiana Superdome as a professional, Shreveport native, had family in attendance. So, too, by the way, did Marquez Stevenson. How about that? Your first NFL game, you play in the NFL stadium closest to your home in Shreveport? My God.
I think for McDermott, there was a little something in that, too. So, you know what? If we're going to get to maximize this kid's chance and maximize his motivation to do well, put him in front of family, back in the hometown.
Yeah.
I don't think that's nothing.
That wasn't by accident. We got phone lines open 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Jump on board. Let us know your biggest takeaway from the victory last night. We also have, in hour number two, Greg Cosell making his weekly appearance with us, only this time he's reviewing a game, not preparing us for one. So we'll talk to him about Bill's Saints and get some of his X's and O's thoughts on that. And then final half hour of the show, Maddie Glab will join us for the Maddie Awards, as she does after every Bill's victory. But let's go to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Open line for you there, but we go and lead off with Dwayne in Ransomville. Dwayne, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
I'd like to talk about the low tackling that the Saints did on the Bills. They were even whipping their legs around Josh Allen. And I thought that was illegal.
The chop block is illegal. Oh, you're talking about hitting a quarterback low?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is illegal, and they totally missed it. And Coach McDermott was hot about it after the game. He was really walking a fine line of getting fined for criticizing officiating. He was hot about that. Really not happy at all. And yeah, I'm going to try to find the quote while Steve kind of addresses.
There's all
this
kinds
as well.
Of stuff, and people saw it, and a lot of people are on that bandwagon with you. They feel the exact same way as you, Dwayne. Of course, it's mostly it's Bills fans that you always point to guys like if it happened to Ben Roethlisberger or Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or any of the elite quarterbacks, that call gets made without even a question. And Josh is sitting there looking at the guy like, and the guy's like, what? He's like he wasn't even watching for it. And
it wasn't good.
Yeah, it was not good. And think about it. Ed Oliver got called last week for the same thing, coming in low behind.
He got called for another one in that game.
Yeah. Why them and not that? Why those and not that one that we just watched?
Yeah.
And
you're on the money with that,
Dwayne. I agree with you, Dwayne. So you're right.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. I will say that I found Coach's quote on it last night because I was, covering the press conference, and he basically said, I know we had the one penalty on the quarterback. I think he's referring to the Ed Oliver hit. I thought they should be called for one, quite honestly, on Josh. I'm really frustrated that that doesn't get called. That's clear as day to see that. I just want to protect my quarterback. I thought overall we played more disciplined, playing with better technique. So it's got to continue in terms of not getting called for a lot of penalties. But he was hot. He was not happy about that at all.
Yeah, and it's exactly the kind of thing that gets a guy put out of the game.
Well, yeah, it's the most important player on the field. So
that's why that exact thing is – you see it called all the time.
That's why the penalty is there, to protect
the
quarterback.
And I think the official was worried about Josh throwing it. Josh was obviously throwing it away, but Devin Singletary, the official, was worried about seeing if somebody was there to throw it to. He didn't watch the play, the quarterback,
Well, somebody's got to be watching that.
That's his job. Yeah. He's got another guy on the sidelines that's going to watch for somebody to throw the football to.
Let's go to Rick in Rochester next. Rick, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. Great show. I got another take on that the acceleration of Marquis Stevenson over Isaiah McKenzie. Do you think because playing in the dome, they wanted to accelerate the tribe where there's going to be no elements, no wind, as opposed to throwing them out there, at Orchard Park with the wind at Bill Stadium, or at some time when they wanted to introduce them and try them? Do you think that accelerated playing inside the dome?
I mean, yeah, it could have been a consideration. I don't think we could rule it out, Rick. It's a valid point. I wouldn't rule it out.
I don't know that that's the reason or maybe a contributing factor. I think it was probably more of a bonus than anything.
Yeah.
I think they were happy for Marquez to put him in there when he didn't have to do it in a rainstorm like Isaiah McKenzie's been doing. So, I think that was a plus. Probably gave him a little more confidence that Marquez wouldn't have to, it wouldn't be so hard to field the kicks because it was indoors. I think that was more of a bonus than a reason to do it, and it probably gave him some more confidence. So I wouldn't say it was, on top. I wouldn't say it was a reason that they did it, but I'm sure it was probably a more comforting factor more than anything else.
Let's go to Kevin in Hamburg next. Kevin, what do you have for us? You're
on
One Bills Live.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Happy Thanksgiving to you guys.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. To you too.
I did. I'm glad we won as good as we did yesterday, because if we would have struggled the way the Bears barely beat the Lions – and the Raiders barely beat the boys, that was a hell of a good game, too. I think it would not have looked good going into next week's against New England, depending on what they do with Tennessee. Because I'm glad we would have barely beat them, and Tennessee lost. They'd be like, uh-oh, this ain't going to look good.
Yeah, I get the momentum argument there. I do. This team was so shorthanded, I kind of thought the Bills would kind of handle them pretty easily. And I'm glad that they did come through on that, the fact that they still had a couple of turnovers.
Yeah, unfortunately,
in the first half, first career turnover in the red zone for Josh Allen last night.
We've also thought at times this year that they were going to win big over other teams
that
as well,
true.
And they couldn't get it done. So, I'm with you. I said that a little earlier in the show too. I think this was a game, in retrospect, now having seen, we didn't know what we were going to see out of the New Orleans Saints. You know what I mean? So we didn't know how they were going to play. But having seen them and to see them play the way they did, and then if we'd have just barely beaten them, yeah, it would have been a different feeling today.
Yeah. And, you know, the win is nice, puts you at 7-4, and that's where you want to be going into this next game against the Patriots, which is going to be seismic in nature. We mentioned the Trey White injury. There was also Reggie Gilliam, who went out with an ankle injury later in the game. We had a revolving door at right guard for a minute there. Cody Ford goes out with an arm injury, questionable to return. Ryan Bates comes in, plays about a series and a half. He gets injured. He comes off. And then you have Jameel Douglas on the field, who's a four-year vet who's been around the league. And then Ford eventually returned to the game. But that was a little harrowing for a little bit there, too. Let's get one more in here before the break. We've got Kevin in Rochester. Kevin, what do you have for us here on One Bills Live?
Very happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Great win for the Bills. Tough game for both teams with all the personnel that was out. I noticed over the last four or five games, Josh Allen has been successful with drawing the opponents offside. I noticed that it seems to be when he's using a longer cadence, he doesn't snap the ball until he says the word Omaha. And I'm just wondering if anyone seems to me defensive people have picked up on that as well, and don't know if anyone's maybe brought that to the attention, that maybe that's something that's been overused at this point.
Hard to say, but you know they study and check everything when they're doing film study. I mean, they'll, yeah, anything they can pick up to get an advantage on the opponent or to know the opponent better, they're going to utilize it.
They hope that everybody knows it at this point, because yeah, now all they got to do is change
switch
it.
Yeah.
And then when they think they know it, they don't know it. So, yeah, who knows? It may be pointed all at the Patriots game, so they come out and do that once in the first half and then change it up in the second half and get one. And we've seen Sean McDermott do it a handful of times over the years here in Buffalo, once or twice a season, where they go out on a fourth and very short. Like they're going to line up and do it, and they call them, they try to get them off sides. It doesn't work. They take a timeout. And last night they took a delay of game as well. So some people were really mad about why waste a timeout to do that. But you know, they try every angle, and they test the discipline of the other team. Now, one of the things too, on a team like Tennessee, and certainly a team like New England, are smart enough and have done it themselves enough. They will get an idea that that's coming from Josh Allen. He's going to try and draw them off sides, and they will try and draw the Bills off sides. They will go through all the motions of jumping into the neutral zone without jumping into the neutral zone and get the Bills to react, and it's a penalty on the Bills. That works both ways. So, yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Just to update you on the state of the AFC conference standings after Buffalo's win over New Orleans last night. They vaulted themselves from the 7th seed up to the 3 seed. So it is now Tennessee, Baltimore, Buffalo. Buffalo is ahead of Kansas City, who is also 7-4 by virtue of their head-to-head win over the Chiefs. And then New England, 7-4 in the 5th spot. Cincinnati, 6-4 in the 6th spot. And the Chargers move into spot number 7 at 6-4. So that's your situation as far as the AFC standings go as of now. Obviously, they'll change with this weekend's action, and we'll recap this whole situation again on Monday. But they just vaulted themselves up 4 spots with a win. You beat New England on Monday night, you know, in 10 days. Now you're 8-4, and more importantly, New England's 7-5. And you hope you can keep stacking wins to keep increasing the distance between you and them.
I think what you kind of hope for, I don't know, but you're 2 games behind Tennessee. And I don't know whether you cheer.
And you don't have the head-to-head.
Right.
So it's 2.5.
That's what I'm saying.
Really?
It's 2. It's 1.
Oh, it's 2.
Now.
That's right.
They're 1 game behind them in the standings, but they're 2 games because of the head-to-head. If New England beats them tonight and you beat New England, you're back in the hunt for the 1 seed, depending on what Baltimore does. Yeah, I mean, nobody's out of this. Kansas City's still thinking 1 seed now. They're 7-4, just like Buffalo. Cincinnati and the Chargers, the Bengals and the Chargers. All these teams are within one game of the one seed, and that's the top seven. And Pittsburgh has four losses and one tie. I mean, there's a lot of football. We got, you know, six, Bills have six games. Patriots have – all these teams have six games left.
Well, or by the end of this weekend
– right, by the end of the weekend.
The Bills will still have a game in hand on the Patriots because the Patriots' bye week is not until week 14.
Right. The Patriots, though, think about it. They've got Tennessee, Buffalo, the bye, then Indianapolis, then Buffalo. This is a tough stretch for New England. This is a critical stretch for them as well. So it'll be interesting to see how they weather it. But there's no question. Buffalo, New England, Tennessee, Baltimore, Kansas City, all of those teams feel like you've got to win out if you want to get a bye for the playoffs.
We have to take a break here, but we will get back to your phone calls when we catch up with you on the other side. It's One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, here on a Buffalo Football Friday. Back in a flash. Pepsi is giving Bills Mafia a chance to prove to everyone that they're some of the best fans in the league. You might recognize a few faces in their tailgate traditions and their new ad. You can check out at buffalobills.com/goodluckpepsi. Check it out. We do have to get back to the phones after this 31-6 win for the Bills over the Saints. A lot of Bills fans in attendance at the Superdome last night. But we go to the fans on our phone lines. And leading us off here in this segment is Don Onacell. Don, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, how are you? Love the game. You were talking earlier about how Coach McDermott was pretty hot, but, you know, risked being fined. And then you're talking about Josh getting hit low. First couple plays of the game, the defensive lineman headbutted Josh.
Yep, saw that
no
too.
Call.
Yep.
I think the following play, a little swing pass to Singletary, he got tackled. The guy stood up, stood over him, and taunted him.
Yep.
No
taunt.
Call.
Yep. Yep. I saw them both, Don. I was checking for rain.
I was shocked.
Night. Going, what's going on?
I was shocked that the headbutt on Josh Allen did not get called. Shocked. Same thing. I thought, okay.
You could argue that was a helmet hit and taunting, all in the same thing.
Yeah. It was, yeah. So it could have been unsportsmanlike as well as taunting. I mean, if you wanted to
saying.
Do that.
Well,
in this day and age and in this environment, I was shocked that was not called. I am absolutely shocked that was not called. Now
it's so that was horribly inconsistent. It's
was just, that the kid that he played college football with?
Granderson, I don't remember.
I think it was. So
on that play,
it might
with the
have
helmet
been,
bump?
Yeah, that might have been friendly.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Yeah, it might have been like they might have been John Friendly and stuff. But Josh kind of like, hey, you know.
Yeah, well, he always tries to embellish, which
right.
is which I would is, do the same
yeah,
thing.
That's he almost, yeah, practice that stuff. But
yeah, seriously.
I don't think he does. But, yeah, I was surprised, shocked.
And he's right. The guy did stand over Singletary
we
also.
All of us. Every Bills fan everywhere watching all the Bills games and whatever other games that are thrown at you that you need to watch, you feel good about watching, whatever games you can take in. We've all been watching this season, and all of us just want one thing. Just call it the same for everybody. Taunting, yeah. And it's a ticky-tack call. I mean, if you're calling it against everybody, fine. But call it against everybody.
Yeah.
Just do it the same.
In case Bills fans are wondering, it was Brad Allen's crew last night that officiated the game. Guy's got the same last name as Josh. Can't even throw him a bone on a helmet hit or a low tackle. Back to the phones, Jeff in Baldwinsville. Jeff, what do you have for us?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
Great show.
Good. Thank you.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. It seemed like the running game had a little bit of a spark last night. I don't know if it was brighter or what, but what do you guys think about maybe a little more fullback use, tight ends, try and keep that spark going in our running game?
Yeah,
I
don't know if it's necessarily because you had a fullback on the field. Brian Daboll isn't shy about using 21 personnel, and he came out with it last night at the beginning of the game. I will say that the running game did have a spark again last night. You look at the final stat sheet, they weren't overly productive in terms of a yards per carry average, but I thought some of the runs were productive at the right times to keep them on schedule. there were still times where there was too much penetration in the backfield, where offensive linemen were not winning. But I think there were also some carries in there that were productive. And Coach McDermott pretty much said that too. He said, look, I thought that we ran the ball better in the second half than we did in the first half. If you look at the numbers, it's almost identical. 16 carries for 50. What did I do? I wrote it down. Hold on. 16 carries for 55 yards in the first half. 16 carries for 58 yards in the second half. I mean, it was almost identical. We ran better in the second half. Okay, Coach. We're with you.
I got it. My take on this is probably not really popular, and it's not. Might be nobody wants to hear it, but they ran the ball better last night because Josh had 5 incompletions on the night. He was 20. You know, the pass sets up the run. That's why they ran better last night. It's not that they were more physical or better or whatever, because they were worried about Josh completing yet another pass on him. The passing game sets up the running game. They threw it lights out last night, and when they didn't, Josh ran for first downs and was sliding out of bounds or getting cartwheeled. He got cartwheeled one time.
Yeah.
Josh made him pay when they ran certain coverages and they didn't watch out for him and they didn't contain him. He made him pay for it. So they ran the ball, but in my opinion, they ran the ball better last night because Josh was crushing them.
I will say,
with
though,
his legs and his arm.
I will say on the opening drive, though, Matt Breida goes 4 carries, 19 yards. I mean, there were a couple of runs. He looked like he got shot out of a cannon.
And Singletary came in and played later in the game, and he made some really nice runs, some tough runs, got the ball down inside the 5 on a 16-yard run. Yeah. I mean, that was from the 20. He had some really nice moments last night, no question about it. I agree. The running game was a bigger factor last night, but it's my contention that it was because, you know, Josh and Steph and the rest were winning outside.
I think you have a fair argument there. Now, granted, we're talking about a couple of Josh Allen scrambles mixed in here, but 7 of those plays on the opening 10-play scoring drive to start the game for them on the first possession, run plays. 7 of their first 10 plays, run plays. And like I said, a couple of them were Allen scrambles, but still in all, I think there was a concerted effort to keep a healthy mix going.
It's probably 50-50, right? If Josh dropped back, it probably ran twice, right? On that opening drive. And
scrambled
then,
twice. So it's probably 50-50, but that balance is there for a reason.
Yeah, he threw for the 4 touchdowns, did Josh, but you know, the one touchdown that really got me, obviously we saw the Diggs route on the outside against Lattimore, which screwed
him into the ground.
Right, which is great. If they've got him ISO'd and some space, and Josh has that kind of time to let him work his magic, and throws it that accurately with that much zip, you can't defend it. It's just, you know, it's too hard to do.
Yeah, it's past your ear.
And right, so... But the pass that really got me was the screen pass to Breida for 22 yards and a touchdown. Breida catches it, gets the interference. He runs through a crowd, and he's there. I mean, his speed made a difference. And then the 2 Dawson Knox touchdowns were fantastic. Actually, 3. One of them didn't count. it was a really good night for Josh. He threw his first red zone interception and his arm got hit because he didn't want to take the easy one early. He waited for the deep one. It was covered, and he tried to come back to it too late and got his arm hit. I just thought the running game was a great compliment last night. They established their desire and ability to split the difference between the run and pass early in that game, and I think it paid dividends later on. I mean, Josh completed 81% last night.
I will say that Breida's speed is an asset because you talk about all the problems that this team has had on screenplays. He's on a screenplay there, and that's a traditional screenplay. There's nothing fancy about that screenplay because he's so damn fast. The guys out in front that have to block don't have to block as long because he's already past them. That's a screenplay that's designed to go up the sideline. He cut it back inside. And Mitch Morse held his block long enough on the inside there to not let the linebacker or the safety get over to him. And Breida gets in the end zone on a 23-yard play.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if that's happening with Moss or Singletary.
Right. It was a good night. And I like, you know, the fact that they're running screen passes these days.
People off of Josh.
Yeah, it was a good night. The Saints weren't up to the challenge. I mean, they just weren't. They were outgunned and outmanned last night. It looked like it. And while the Bills played the way they should have, I still think they left a lot of things on the field. And, with Josh throwing two picks like he did, there's a lot of things to clean up.
Yeah.
But that's more like the football team we thought we were going to get when this season kicked off.
Let's get back to the phones, and we're going to Jack in Cheektowaga next. Jack, what do you have? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi, guys. I'd like to talk about the O-line. And you've both made the point in previous shows that, we've got to depend on the coaching staff. They see these guys day in, day out. They know what the status is. But if we've got a number three draft pick like Spencer Brown, who, won that starting right tackle job because of his skill and his physicality and his ability, but he's not available. Why aren't we starting our number four guy, Tommy Doyle, at right tackle and putting Williams back in at guard? Because that solves two problems if Doyle is up to the job, and if he's not, is he considered a bust?
Well, no. You may have answered your own question, Jack. He's not starting because he's not ready in the eyes of the coaching staff. If he was ready, he'd be out there. And it's clear that they don't believe that. He came in for one snap in the Jets game when Deion Dawkins got shaken up, lined up at left tackle, gave up a sack, played one snap. The only reason he's not out there, you can surmise, is that they don't think he's ready to handle that role. I mean, I don't know where you can't land anywhere else, really.
Yeah, right. If he was ready, he would. And here's the thing, too. If he was ready, he would prove it in practice that he was ready, and they would know it. Now, that doesn't mean they've given up on him.
No, he's a rookie.
And that doesn't mean that he's not, in their plans for the future. But he's got to get better. And, what are you going to do if you it's too early to do that, because if you decide you're going to be done with him, what happens when he pulls a Wyatt Teller on you and becomes an all-pro?
Yeah.
Because he develops.
Yeah, let him grow. And Steve's seen this with teammates. We've watched this league long enough to know that rookies develop at different rates. Yeah. Spencer Brown's on the fast track. Tommy Doyle isn't. That's why one was drafted in the third round, the other was drafted in the fifth round. Right. There might be a little. You might need a little bit more of an on-ramp for Tommy Doyle before it all clicks for him and he's playing the consistent type of football where the coaching staff trusts him implicitly, especially in a road environment in a dome.
Yeah. I'm not – they're not giving up on him yet. Certainly there's a reason why he's not on the field. He's not ready, and they got – and like we said before, sometimes it's not about just taking a tackle off the field and plugging another tackle in. Darrell Williams plays right tackle better than Tommy Doyle does at this point, and – that leaves the guards to come in and fill in those spots, and the total five guys up front is better than they would be if you just plugged Tommy Doyle in at right tackle and left everybody else as is.
Break time for us here. We'll squeeze in a few more of your phone calls when we return here on this Buffalo Football Friday. It's One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
The handoff, back to throw, fires to the end zone. It is caught in the end zone. Touchdown, Buffalo. Stephon Diggs, a 5-yard touchdown catch from Josh Allen.
All right, that is your Hunt Red Zone play of the game, the Diggs 5-yard touchdown catch from Josh Allen. Visit huntrealestate.com to score on all your real estate needs. Want to go around the locker room here quickly as we listen to Josh, who also threw a couple of touchdown passes to tight end Dawson Knox.
He continues to get better when the ball's in the air, especially just making plays on the football. He's going to be bigger than most DBs and faster than most linebackers and shoot maybe even faster than most DBs. I mean, he's got unreal athleticism, and he's putting it together right now. It's really fun to be playing with him. On top of that, he's just a great person off the field as well, and just – you see the type of man that he is, and it's a guy that you want to play with because he's going to give you the respect that you want to give him, and he's just an awesome teammate.
So around the locker room, presented by Connect Life, your blood and organ donor network, Knox, he wasn't busy until they were down in the red zone. I mean, he caught a touchdown pass early in the game, and then he catches one other ball for about two quarters, and then he catches the next one at the touchdown on fourth and two.
Yeah.
Yeah, which
pretty efficient.
Yeah, it was an interesting description that he had of the second touchdown, Steve, because he said, my assignment there is to block the defensive end and then release on the fourth and two. He said, nobody lined up over me. They lined up wider.
Yeah.
He's like, now I'm like, I better get out there in a hurry because he's going to have somebody breathing down his neck. He said, and I turn around Josh is throwing me a fadeaway jumper. Because he's got somebody in his kitchen.
Right.
You know, so he's like, he was amazed how effectively Josh still got the ball out, you know, throwing that fadeaway pass. And then he turns around. There's nobody in front of him.
Right.
But Gabe Davis with a great block down the field. Dawson was heaping credit on him. He's like, look at both of my touchdowns and look at what Gabe Davis does on both of them.
I'll give you three guesses who the tight end on my fantasy team is.
Ooh, week. Yummy, yum, yum,
yum, yum,
yum, yum,
yum.
Give me some.
Yeah.
Let's get a phone call in here as we go to Bant on a Cell. What do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey guys, great to be with you after a Buffalo Bills win. I wanted to comment on the usage and the lineup the coaches put out there yesterday. And how I feel like this has to be what we could have been hoping for coming into the season. Keeping the consistent play of the players we had, Davis, Diggs, and Allen, and adding to that with Sanders and Breida and the unexpected emergence of Knox. But I guess I kind of want to know why we didn't, in your guys' opinion, move forward with what had worked and use those additions. And just hope it keeps going. Tag in the Hall of Fame, buddy.
Bant, what do you mean by moving forward with those? What do you think they did?
I think
did?
He means more playing time for Gabe Davis,
Breida
on the field, all
make these changes sooner.
Yeah.
Davis looked like Davis looked last year. It doesn't look like there was – any regression or any step back to his game. So I want to kind of know why you guys think he would have been absent all this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
fair
it's
question.
A crowded field. Gabe Davis has been – I think this too. It's hard not to like Gabe Davis when every time he's on the field, he's doing the right thing and making a play. He has done it consistently as – tell me about a rookie wide receiver who showed up and consistently did what Gabe Davis has done as well as he has done. I mean, I can't think of a bad play.
I can count on two hands almost the high degree of difficulty receptions he's made over the last year plus.
So
forget about the easy stuff.
Yeah, I get that. It's hard to find a bad thing to say about the way Gabe Davis has played when he's gotten the opportunity. And the question remains, and like Bant just said,
why wasn't he on the field
why
sooner?
Why isn't he getting more opportunities like Breida is? You know?
Well, why did it take half the season for Breida?
Right. And also, the thing is, too. In Breida's case, not so applicable because we've all been like looking at the side, looking a little bit sideways at the running back in the passing game and the running back in the running game. So you think, okay, Breida, we were clamoring for a change there. Not so much on the outside because if Gabe Davis goes on, is Emmanuel Sanders going to sit down? Cole Beasley going to sit down? Or Stephon Diggs going to sit down? Who's going to sit down? That's your question.
It's hard.
It's hard.
It's hard. You got a lot of good guys, but we may be seeing a shift here. Because I think it's unquestionable. Breed has provided a spark, whether he's running or catching the football. He makes the blocking assignments easier because he's through the hole faster or he's, out in the flat and making somebody miss fast. You know what I mean? He's just there's a spark there that he provides. It's unquestionable. And as you said, every time Gabriel Davis steps on the field, something good happens. And he might not even need to catch the ball. He's the best blocking right. receiver on the roster.
So I get it. I get it. Why not, why not sooner? But like everything, these guys get what they earn. And that means there's guys ahead of Gabe Davis who are playing extremely well and doing everything that the coaching staff wants to see, and they want to get them, reward them, and keep Gabe Davis as happy as they can. Now, he's up and active, and he's playing special teams, and he gets sprinkled in the offense. So does Kumerow. Kumerow gets a sneaky amount of reps on the offense. A lot, you know, he never gets the ball thrown to him, but the guy's a physical blocker, and they use him in that role, and he's very good at it. So, yeah, I get it. Sometimes it doesn't make sense to us, but I think behind the scenes, it's all about this. You're earning, you're getting what you earn, and there are guys ahead of Gabe Davis and around Gabe Davis and Kumerow and all these guys. Isaiah McKenzie, we've seen that go up and down. Marquez Stevenson. There's some things going on Monday through Saturday that lead to the reps that all these guys get on Sunday, and I'm, you know, we may never know the full story.
Oh no, we won't know the full reason, but you wonder if there is a shift happening here as this team comes down the stretch, where they're convinced, you know what, we're getting a little more impact here with this younger player. We're getting more of a spark here with this guy in the lineup. We're leaving him in. I mean, it's not you keep doing that, you're going to stay on the field. And that's probably something that bears watching here over these next several weeks, especially knowing the magnitude of the next game on the schedule. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, we'll be joined by one Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films, who will be doing a game review, not a game preview, as he usually does for us on Fridays. We're going to talk Bills Saints and the X's and O's therein next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are. Hour number two on a Buffalo Football Friday. And while we are reviewing a game, We're still going to employ the services of one Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films. Greg, we're usually previewing a Bills matchup. We are reviewing a Bills matchup, so a little bit of a different take here. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the opening possession by the Bills. Ten play drive, and it's pretty balanced. I mean, yes, Allen has a couple of scrambles, which I guess you could argue were probably passes. You know, at the outset, but pretty balanced out of the gate there, and they marched right down the field. And I thought the run game, while if you look at the final stat sheet, wasn't all that productive from a yards per carry average, I thought it was effective in at least keeping the Saints honest last night, as Josh threw just about everything and almost nothing hit the ground yesterday.
Yeah, well, they had a 10-play touchdown drive. Seven of the 10 plays were called runs. The two Allen plays were called runs. So, and they also featured base personnel. So, yeah, they're clearly making an effort to run the ball with both some volume, and obviously they want production, and it's important to do that. And I think we see why every week, because their O-line is not a great pass-protecting O-line. That could also be another reason why the pass game, guys, has become somewhat condensed, because they just don't feel really comfortable with deeper drops. Every team will try shot plays here and there, but this pass game has been pretty condensed. The ball comes out quick. They do a real nice job in the short to intermediate areas. But the run game, I agree with you, Chris. I mean, while the numbers might not have looked, you know, beautiful on a sheet of paper, I thought they did some good things. And they started with Breida, as you guys know. And I think they focused a lot of what they did based on him, because they got him outside. Pull schemes, center tackle pull, pin pull, outside zone, toss. It was both under center. It was with Allen in the gun. So clearly, I think they tailored their run game to the specific back.
What benefit have the Bills gotten, if any, from a defensive adjustment standpoint from the teams that are playing the Bills? What benefit have the Bills gotten by going heavier with a fullback, the tight ends, the extra offensive linemen? They did that a lot more. They've done a lot more of late. What benefit are they getting from that?
You know, it's funny you ask. I was very conscious of looking at that, watching the tape this morning. I don't think they're getting a big benefit yet. And the point is you have to keep doing it to start getting the benefit, Steve, because the Saints did play an awful lot of shell coverage. And I think teams are not yet ready to say that this run game is something we really have to game plan for. But in an ideal world, you hope to continue doing this and at least have enough of a meaningful run game that teams may think, hey, you know what? They're going to run the ball. And maybe we do want to bring up a safety. Maybe we do want to play a different way and not just think that, hey, the run game's not that relevant in how they play or not that productive. So we'll see. But the Saints didn't really, again, just from looking at the tape, I don't think they felt like they had to stop the run game. But clearly the run game was a factor. And, you know, I've always believed the run game, sure, you want to run for a lot of yards, but I still come back to what Brandon Staley said 4 or 5 weeks ago. I think the run game is really important to make the game physical, to make the defense have to come up and tackle. I just think it's important for a number of reasons, and I think they have to keep doing it.
On the defensive side of the ball for Buffalo, Ed Oliver has had a pretty strong month. He's had maybe his longest stretch of consistent play in a Bills uniform. And he was noticeable again last night. I mean, even on some of the plays that Addison finished, he was responsible for spilling to him.
Right.
Just maybe talk about his penetration ability. I mean, they didn't have an answer for him.
No. He's consistently shown outstanding quickness off the ball this season. And the Bills are a predominant over front. And what we mean, you know, I know you guys know what that means, but that means they line up with their D-line shifted to the strong side of the offensive formation. So when Oliver is the three technique to that side, okay, that means to the tight end side, he is extremely hard for tackles to execute reach blocks against him when the run goes to the weak side. He's just too quick off the ball. I thought he also flashed some outstanding hand quickness as a pass rusher. I thought his sack in the second quarter was a great example of that. And overall, I thought the Bills' front four was the dominant unit versus the Saints' O-line in this game. Now, we know that the Saints were missing a few normal starters, but, hey, this is the NFL. That's the way it works. But the Bills' front four was clearly, clearly dominant. You know what play really stood out to me, guys? You talk about Oliver, Chris?
Yeah.
If you think back a week, which I know Bills fans don't really want to think back a week, but the Colts killed them with what I call wham trap. Right. I think they ran it four times, and they just killed them with it, including one of the touchdowns by Taylor in the tight red zone. But they also had some longer runs with it. The Saints ran wham trap in the high red zone late in the third quarter, and Oliver was so quick off the ball, he beat the trap block. And he forced Jones to bounce it outside. And that quickness was just, I mean, watching it on tape, because I didn't really notice it live watching last night. So when I saw it on tape, I was like, wow, that was incredibly quick off the ball.
Yeah, and I think the fact that they're getting that kind of production from upstairs, did you see any? They activated Onku, they activated F.A. Obada.
Yeah.
They rotate those guys through at a high rate. Is that still continuing to be effective in your mind? Or is there a combination that they try to put out there in crucial downs to make sure they have, you know, like an A squad and a B squad or whatever? Or is it more random than that? Do they have different combinations they run through there? How do you see their defensive line rotation working out?
I didn't notice that.
The
one thing I did notice, and this was the only thing I specifically noticed, was that Onku and Brian seemed to play together inside. Yeah. But beyond that, I didn't, you know, necessarily take note. I will say this. I think as I watch this defense, and again, it's no knock on any particular player, but I think there's four guys to me that really kind of, you know, and let's put Oliver aside for a moment. He's playing at a really high level, but let's put him aside for a moment. I think there's four guys that really make this defense work, and this defense is playing really well. I think the safeties, Poyer and Hyde, are critical to this defense. I think Milano, and he made a lot of good plays last night, Milano. Yep. I just think he, and I've been talking about him for 3 years, as you guys know.
Right.
And I think the slot corner Johnson is really important. This team has not played a snap of base defense in weeks. They've been 100% nickel. What is it, for something like 3 weeks in a row now? Chris, you might know that exactly.
The Titans game in week six is the last time they played base with three linebackers on the field, and it was sparingly.
Right. So, I mean, if you're going to do that, your slot corner has to be more than just what we think of as a slot corner, a guy who's covered slot receivers. I mean, you have to feel really good because he essentially becomes a Sam linebacker.
Right.
In certain, you know, depending on what the offensive formation is. And I think Johnson, you guys remember, I talked about him last year. Remember about midseason, I said, you know, I thought he was a really good player. They obviously think so, too, because they paid him. But and they play him every single snap. So I think he is absolutely critical to this defense.
It was interesting because after last week's game, Leslie Frazier was asked, with the way Jonathan Taylor was running your team over, did you ever think about putting base defense on the field?
Right.
He said no. He said no. And with somebody said, well, why not? Why wouldn't you put a bigger body out there? He said, because we were putting eight in the box, and if we can't stop the run with eight in the box, it's not because of who we have out there. It's because of how they are playing. It was his opinion that it was a gap integrity and a fundamental tackling issue, not a personnel grouping issue. That's how much they think of Taron Johnson. So,
and I think, look, there's a lot of, we're in an era where there's a lot of good slot corners in this league right now, and they play an awful lot of snaps. Not as much as the Bills, who play more nickel than any team in the league, but there's a lot of teams that play a lot of nickel. And, you know, as you guys know, a slot corner, number one, he has to be able to play the run. He has to be able to blitz at times, which Johnson does as well. And then you have to be able to play both man and zone coverage. I think Johnson can cover those four bases at a pretty good level. I think he's a really good player.
Yeah, and I would agree. And I think that's one of the things that gets lost in this, because he's not like, I mean, he's not like the Legion of Boom, where he's a 6'4".
He's not Cam Chancellor.
Yeah, he's not Cam Chancellor or even, you know, Richard Sherman or any of those. He's a 5'10", 190 guy, right? So I think that's the surprising thing, is his ability to stand up to the punishment that he may or may not get at, you know, coming
and
up.
And he's super competitive against the run. I mean, you guys see, you know, when he attacks in the run game, I mean, he sticks his nose right in there. He's not one of those corners guys that shies away from trying to tackle in the run game.
What kind of difference did you see Tremaine Edmonds make yesterday in the Saints game? To me, I noticed him yesterday more than I had in other games before that. You know, he was out for a couple of games, and him coming back, I thought, wow, he's around the ball a lot more than I remember him being in the first six games.
Yeah, he was. I noticed that too. And it's funny. He didn't make. I don't know what the tackle numbers were. You guys might have that info right in front of you. I don't remember him making a ton of tackles, but I remember him being involved right in the middle of the plays. Look, I believe that Edmonds and Milano are as, you know, they're one of the best. Obviously you could start going through nickel linebacker duos in the league, and there's a lot of good ones, but I think they're among the best nickel linebacker duos in the NFL, and they're different kinds of players. They normally don't ask Edmonds very often to match up to tight ends. That's normally what Milano does, or one of the safeties, depending on how they want to play it. But Edmonds is a long, big body with great speed, and you know, he in the box, because he's so big, he navigates ground really effectively. Again, I don't have tackle numbers in front of me, but you're right, Steve. He was every running play, it seemed like, well, there's Edmonds. Even if he didn't make the tackle, he was right there.
Yeah, they both tied. Milano and Edmonds tied for the team lead with eight tackles each. So they were active and effective. Right. Deion Dawkins, Greg, had some struggles last night. I'm trying to ascertain what the main issue for him is, because his play has been inconsistent this season. And
there was
one play in particular, Greg, and knowing you kind of combed through the film, I'm curious for your take on this. There was one particular play where the defensive end, he tried to jump set him. Deion tried to jump set the defensive end, but the defensive end's first step was inside, like almost like reducing down at the snap.
Right.
The play's over already. He can't recover in time, and now he's giving up an inside pressure, and Josh has to go run for his life. Is there something about his approach to opponents that is impacting him, like, at the snap? It's almost like he's losing so quickly. I'm wondering if his pre-snap approach is flawed.
Yeah, and I'm not a cop-out. I can't speak to that. I don't feel like I know quite enough about that. But I think you're right. I think that he has been very inconsistent throughout this season. It's one of the reasons I believe that they can't take that pass approach. Because, you know, we've discussed this, and I've discussed it elsewhere. People forget about the offensive line when they think about a team throwing so much. They only talk about the quarterback. But, you know, you're asking your offensive line to pass protect 40, 45 times a game. That's a hard deal, okay? You could still argue that the biggest mismatch in the NFL is offensive line versus the quality of pass rushers that are out there. And the quality of pass rushers coming from college are only getting more athletic. And not that offensive linemen aren't getting more athletic, some are, but it's still the biggest mismatch on the field. So people forget about that. But I agree with you, Chris. I don't think Dawkins has been really good on a week-to-week basis, and he would be viewed as their best O-lineman. And, you know, I think it's been a little bit of a struggle for him.
Well, even with the game last night in New Orleans, even the most ardent Buffalo Bills fans, while we're all happy with a 31-6 win, a decisive victory, let me ask you this, and I don't know how well you can speak to it or how much you want to say about it, but give us a real scoop. How bad were the Saints? I mean, they are nicked up. They've got nobody playing. Their left tackle and his replacement are down. Kamara's out. Ingram is out. Taysom Hill is out. All these guys are out. How undermanned can you sense that the Saints were last night playing against the Bills?
Yeah, I think offensively the Saints are bad right now because Simeon was bad last night too. He missed a number of throws that he has to make. Because normally Simeon is a guy you can line up and play with. Obviously, he's not good enough to be a full-time starter, but the last couple of weeks, he's been bad. And he missed too many routine layup throws last night. So offensively, they're bad. On the offensive line, they are playing with some backups, and their O-line got handled last night. But defensively, they're playing with very few exceptions. I mean, I know Davenport was out, but defensively, they played with their group. And, you know, I thought the Bills did a really good job. I thought the Bills did a really good job situationally, too. And a lot of games come down to situations. You know, I thought that the Davis 26-yarder on 3rd-and-2 on the third possession was a really good call.
Yeah, play action.
You could almost argue that the Knox 24-yard touchdown on 4th-and-2 was the same play concept as the Davis 26-yarder, just with different people from a different formation. So, you know, I thought they did a really good job in those kinds of situations. And we know situational football is so critical on both sides of the ball.
And then, you know, the last couple of weeks, Matt Breida, the two games prior to this, touched the ball 12 times, 117 yards and 2 touchdowns. He gets more work last night, not a tremendous amount more, but again, he's providing a spark. I mean, Greg, screen passes have been a monumental problem for this team to execute with any measure of effectiveness. He takes a traditional screen pass, 23 yards for a touchdown.
And it wasn't overly well blocked, by the way. He made that a touchdown. So, see, the thing about Breida, ultimately, that you like, which is different from Singletary and Moss, is that Breida at least has some juice. Breida can turn, you know, a short run into a long run simply because he's got some juice to him. And I think they need that right now because their pass game has not really been attacking downfield either by choice or just because they feel like it's not there, whatever the reason. But I think you'll see more of Breida, and I think you'll see runs that play to his strength. And that's why I mentioned you saw a lot of outside type runs. But here's the screen that we're looking at right now. And, you know, you can see there were two defenders who were unblocked right there, and he basically made them miss. So he just adds another element.
Looking at the other games around the NFL yesterday, all three road teams won. I don't know if there's a trend there or what you make of that, but what did you see in the Dallas-Oakland game and, of course, in the Detroit-Chicago game? Anything of note?
Well, I'm in the name of full disclosure, I did not see the early game. I was actually in the office watching tape, Steve, believe it or not. You know, so I did,
Greg,
and then we went Greg, to, and then Greg, we went to our, Greg, our dinner.
You're a goner, man.
I know. I'm
you're
lost.
An absolute
I'm
goner.
Lost. I get it. I get it.
I'm on lost. Thanksgiving, he's watching tape.
Yeah, I'm a little lost. So I got home. You know, I didn't get home till about 3:15. I guess I saw their long 18-play drive with the field goal kick, but that was about it. And then we went to our dinner. But I did watch the Dallas offensive tape, and you know, Dallas is a team right now. They're struggling to run the ball, believe it or not. Last five games, they've not been able to run well at all. Their O-line is getting handled. And that, you know, I think people would be surprised to hear that because it's Dallas's O-line. But their O-line is getting handled in the run game. And they're going to need to get that fixed because I really think Dak Prescott has really grown into a really good quarterback. But again, you get caught up and you can't throw the ball, you know, 50 times a game. You just can't play that way in this league.
All right, Greg, listen, we appreciate the insight as always. We will catch up with you next week when we've got a very
big one next week, Chris.
We
big
got a
one
very
next week.
We got a very, very big one coming up here, as you well
massive.
Know. Massive. And something massive. Tells me it'll be featured on the ESPN NFL matchup show. Just a hunch.
You know, my guest tells me it might be our featured game with a full segment, but, you know, I don't want to jump ahead too far.
All right, we look forward to it.
I just go one play at a time, guys. Yeah. One play at a time.
Talk to your producer. Maybe he'll listen.
Yeah.
That would be me.
I know.
That's right.
All
right.
When you talk to that guy, when you're shaving in the morning, talk to the guy with the razor
right,
in his hand.
Yeah.
Thanks, Greg, as always. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Greg Cosell from NFL Films and also one of the co-hosts on the ESPN NFL matchup show. And he's already kind of given us a giant hint that there will be a full segment on Bills Patriots for week 13.
That game is going to be amazing because the Patriots are playing as they always have played this way, but now they got some guys this year that they didn't have last year. Their defense is playing lights out. They're really difficult to move the ball on. They're great situationally. They're well disciplined. It's going to be a hard game to score points in. And of course they got the young guy Mac Jones who you're not going to sack him, but, you know, the ball's coming out and the guy throws it. Mac Jones doesn't miss layups. And a lot of young quarterbacks have trouble with that. He doesn't.
Yeah.
If the guy's open, he's going to get it there. Cam Newton could not get that done last year. There were a handful of plays in both games against the Patriots where Cam Newton just couldn't put the ball on the guy. Mac Jones can. And that'll make a big difference in this game.
He's completing over 70% of his passes.
He puts the ball where
it's
supposed
efficient.
To go. Yeah, so it's going to be a really interesting game, huge game. The Bills, no question, got the monkey off their back last year with regards to whatever demons they had about the Patriots. And you know, Sean McDermott had not won a game up until last year. Then he swept them. Huge game on Monday night in New England last year where the Bills win 38-9.
Now it's here.
Now it's here. It's going to be an interesting game. It's massive, and it's interesting, too. I'm trying. What are your thoughts? Do you cheer for the Titans or the Patriots?
The most important thing is the division right now.
I think you do.
You
think
you cheer for the Titans. The most important thing is the division. You have to root for the Titans on Sunday. They're not playing tonight.
Huh?
You said you're rooting for the Titans tonight. They're playing on Sunday.
Sunday, yeah. You root for the Titans, and
that'd be kind of cool.
Then you take your chance. Then you hope the Titans fall in. The Titans, just before we go to break, the Titans, New England, then Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, Miami, Houston. Tennessee's got,
they got a cakewalk.
They got a downhill until they get to Pittsburgh, maybe San Francisco, weeks 15 and 16. That's where you hope. Or I don't care. They got to lose a couple games, and the Bills got to keep winning.
We have to take a break here because when we come back, it is time for the Matty Awards presented by One Matty Lab after every Bills victory. So we'll see what clever and creative awards have been thought up this week. We check in with Matty next here on One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Snap.
Josh fakes a handoff, sets up the throw, got a man wide open, caught at the 14-yard line. Dawson Knox inside the five, headed to the end zone, touchdown, Buffalo! On fourth and two, they throw a strike, a touchdown pass, Josh Allen to Dawson Knox.
We have a lot of momentum right now, and that just shows, you know, Coach McDermott having a lot of faith in Coach Daboll, and then Coach Dade's having trust in us and getting the job done.
Yeah, that's what you want. You know, you want to be able to trust your players, and there'll be other situations where we go for it, don't go for it. But at the end of the day, I'm always trying to put the team in the right position to win the game based on score, based on situation.
Why is Dawson having so much success this season?
I think he's using different hair products this year than he did the year just before.
That is your Frito-Lay crunch time play of the game. Dawson Knox's second touchdown reception on a fourth and two play. Frito-Lay, official sponsor of the Buffalo Bills. We'll see if we get another appearance from Dawson Knox in the upcoming Matty Awards presented by Energy Mark, the official energy supplier to the Buffalo Bills. Matty, have you recovered from Thanksgiving? How are you?
I have recovered. I think the better question is, have we recovered from the late night that we all worked yesterday?
Yeah.
And I'm so happy to have worked because, you know, it ended with a win. It would have not been as great waking up Friday morning, you guys having to do the show, me having to work, coming off of a loss going into the Patriots week. A win makes it just feel so much better. And going to sleep at like 2:30 in the morning last night, I was like, you know what? I'm happy that I'm about to get no sleep because the Bills won, and that's the best thing.
Yeah, we'll take it. It makes getting no sleep easier. I don't disagree with that for a second.
So you put in some extra time last night getting ready for the Matty Awards. First out of the bye, where do you start? I mean, it's a 31-6 win over a team that was decimated by injuries. You got back on track both sides of the ball, all three sides of the ball. There's new players on the roster. Where did you start with this?
All right, well, let's just start with – So this week I'm mixing in some like Thanksgiving themed awards and some regular ones. So these may be super cheesy, everybody, but just bear with me, please, because trying to have some fun here on a Friday.
Yeah.
Number one, we're going to go with Wall of Routes. I think we can all guess who gets this award. Stephon Diggs, that route that he ran on his touchdown against Marshon Lattimore was absolutely insane. It was crazy to know that you need to run that type of route in that type of situation and to be able to execute that type of route against a player like Marshon Lattimore. I mean, guys, coming into this game, Stephon Diggs and Marshon Lattimore played against each other four times previously. And in those four games, Steph was only targeted twice when Marshawn was going up against him. This is all PFF with these stats. And in those two targeted times, he had two receptions for 35 yards. So not too bad, but the fact that he was like never targeted going against Marshon Lattimore, gets targeted here and ends up running an insane route that leads to a touchdown for the Buffalo Bills. I mean, absolutely elite. It's hard to have new words to say about Stephon Diggs because I feel like at this time we've used all the words and we've seen how impressive he can be on these routes. But this one was just another example of how great of a football player he is, how great he is at the tasks that he has. He was called a technician by his players after that touchdown reception. I mean, it was crisp. It was clean. I'm not going to be able to get over that route for a while. I think this is going to be a route that we're talking about after the season, going back to some of the best plays, because that was amazing. Steph has six touchdowns in his last six games, which is the most in the NFL over that time span. So he is balling out. I am happy for him, happy for the offense that he's seeing the type of production that he wants. He wants to get the ball. He understands that it's not always going to happen, but that touchdown, wow. Wall of routes.
Yeah, very nice. And I will say this, it kind of reminded me a little bit of Stevie Johnson, because Stevie used to do that one-on-one basketball kind of setup move before getting into his route, and you have to trust that the protection is going to hold up long enough to execute that route and still give Josh a chance to get rid of the ball. And Josh deserves an assist on that, because he threw a freaking laser between the numbers.
Yeah, like, there's a lot in there.
That's a tight window there.
That route doesn't work out on the field because you have to take it past the sticks. But because they're on the six-yard line, they had time. He could work the route without having to worry about getting any depth about it. He could just do it right there. 6 yard deep. Plus, the way he comes out of that route is unbelievable. Because usually, when you plant hard and go inside, you pivot, meaning you put your if you're going on that side of the field Diggs was on, you put your left foot in the ground and turn towards the quarterback. He spun it on like an out route and turned back around.
Yeah, turned his back to the quarterback.
Turned his back to the quarterback. Man, that's high level.
High level.
That's high level
stuff.
High level stuff.
All right, next one, the big old turkey leg. What do we got here?
The turkey leg, this is going to Dawson Knox. One, just because of the way he took a huge bite out of that turkey leg.
Way too big.
I was dying laughing watching those guys try and figure out if they wanted to take a bite, how big of a bite that they should take. You know, Josh and Steph were very much, you know, I'm just gonna nibble here while I answer these post-game questions. And Dawson just Rambo Knox goes straight in for the huge bite and can't even answer a question because he has too much in his mouth and had to drink it down with some water. Hilarious. Yeah. But he also gets the turkey leg award for me because think of the turkey leg. This is a part of the turkey that a lot of people love. You know, a lot of meat on the bone here. So I'm giving this to Dawson because a lot of people loved, including me, his performance from last night. 2 touchdowns, still recovering from that hand injury. They pointed out how much his hand was still swelling after the game or how swelled up it looked. There is no way that he is completely recovered from this injury. Yes, he is healthy enough to be playing, but you are catching balls on a hand that you injured. And the fact that he's been as productive as he's been since coming back, this is his third game back, had 2 touchdowns. Like, wow.
Yeah,
he has had such a great season that we've talked about at length before he came out with the injury. And now seeing him back and being the guy that he was to start the season, a lot of guys can have an injury and come back and, you know, get lost in the mix of everything. That's not the case for Dawson. I mean, he sets a franchise record here for most touchdowns by a tight end. And we're just in week 13. A lot of people counted him out this year. Steve, I know you were not one of those people. He's proving so many people wrong, and I love this for him. So he gets turkey leg for me.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too. We had these conversations in the third year in guys' careers. It's supposed to be kind of this wonder year where they either take a huge step up forward, or you start to make a negative opinion about what kind of player they're going to be. Dawson Knox certainly took a step forward. Also, another third-year player is one of the guys that you're giving your leftover award to.
All right, so leftovers, right? We heard Micah Hyde talk about the leftovers in his press conference last night, saying, you know, we're going to have Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow. The leftovers are better than the meal. You think of the leftovers, people are cleaning up the plate, cleaning up for everyone else. So who gets the clean up the leftovers award is Ed Oliver and Matt Milano, because they're always cleaning it up for everybody. These two had great games. Ed Oliver playing on Thanksgiving, I think it's just his thing where he goes off in these games in front of his family. He talked about he had 40 people, family members wise and friends in the seats because he is from Louisiana. So he just performs well in a Thanksgiving stage and in front of family members. 6 quarterback pressures, that is huge for him. And he also finally got his sack. I know it was only half a sack, but it is something he's been waiting for. He's gotten sacks taken off the board this season. So good to see him finally get one. Love how he's coming onto the scene this season. Just like we talk about Dawson Knox, this is someone who was impressing and definitely playing up to where they were drafted when the Buffalo Bills drafted him in the first round. And Matt Milano, I mean, come on. This guy had some great tackles in space where it could have been really easy for the New Orleans Saints to get loose and get a lot of extra yards. But Matt Milano is there to clean up the job, to do the dirty work. So is Ed Oliver. So they are the leftovers award winners.
Okay. And you take the Thanksgiving theme a step further here with the Thanksgiving traditions, Maddie.
Yeah, we all have traditions, things that we do on Thanksgiving, you know, something that happens every year, whether it's somebody's always burning something or somebody's always bringing this dish to Thanksgiving or there's a game or whatever. Well, what's just a Thanksgiving tradition for the Buffalo Bills? It's that Josh Allen balls out on Thanksgiving. Think back to 2019 against the Dallas Cowboys. The Bills had a great game. It was kind of Josh Allen's coming out party. He completed 79% of his passes. And what does he do last night? Completes 82% of his passes, throws for four freaking touchdowns. That's only happened twice in franchise history where a quarterback has thrown for over 80% and thrown for at least four touchdowns or collected at least four touchdowns. Josh Allen holds both of those stat lines. So he had a great game. I know he threw those two interceptions, which definitely, you know, doesn't amount to as great of a performance as he could have if you wipe those off the board. But he came back from that. And they scored 31 points. He didn't let those two interceptions get to himself, which we know how we talk about Josh Allen. And he knows he can get in his head sometimes and bring himself down. But this offense looked like a high-powered offense last night against the Saints. So Thanksgiving traditions, Josh Allen's balling out on Thanksgiving games. It's just something that happens.
All right. Last one we have time for today, Maddie, the All-Pro Award. And I like where your head's at with this one. Who gets the All-Pro Award?
All right, all pro, just crown already. Jordan Poyer, you earn it in my book. Let's just call him an all pro, send him to the Pro Bowl right now because he completely deserves it. This is someone who has been counted out maybe by national media or just national people who aren't necessarily big Bills fans, but just watch the league or pay attention to the league. He shows up every single game. He has five interceptions this season now. It ties a career high for him. Having such a wonderful, impressive year. Him and Micah Hyde and what they were able to do as a tandem in that safety unit does so much for the defense as a whole. Offenses have such a hard time getting by them. The low amount of passing touchdowns that group has allowed this season, Jordan Poyer is a big reason because of that. And he's a big reason because of the way that the Buffalo Bills play defense as a whole, ranking so high in so many different categories. So he's an all pro in my book. He deserves it. So we're just going to crown him that today as we head into week 13.
Yeah. And the only thing that he may not get is a discount at Emeril Lagasse's restaurant in New Orleans because he was characterizing the turkey as dry.
Well, you got to think.
It was sitting out there for
sitting
a while,
out there for
in
like
fairness
three
to Emeril.
Hours, right? The stuff shows up a little late, probably late to the party. But yeah, Maddie, good stuff.
Thanks as always for your Maddie Awards. We hope and pray that we're talking to you on Tuesday of next week, not this coming week, Tuesday of next week, because that will mean a Monday night victory over the Patriots for Buffalo. So we hope we see you then.
Yes, I hope so too. Have a good show, guys, and have a nice long weekend.
Yeah, let's soak it up, right? All right, that's the Maddie Awards presented by Maddie Glab. We will take a break here and close things up on a Football Friday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Back on this Buffalo Football Friday on the heels of a 31-6 rout of the Saints by the Bills. Now they have a few extra days to let the players rest, relax after 2 games in 5, get a little bit of a layoff here through the holiday weekend, get back at it on Monday, but the coaches will probably be working feverishly to take the extra time or take advantage of the extra time to start prepping for the Patriots.
Yeah, they'll start getting ready for that. I think, you know, you got to be careful of where the Patriots go. They, you know, the Bills have already given up a block punt once this season. And Matt Hawk, one of the things about it is, you know, when they brought him in, he's a good punter, no question. The one fault he has is that he's slow on his get-off times.
Yeah.
You know, you got to think the Patriots will be thinking about that, maybe coming in trying to come after him on that. It's those kind of plays and those off-the-wall plays, you know, a forced fumble here, a tipped pass there, an interception, that kind of – or an awareness play, you know, a trick play in the kicking game or something that, you know, that sometimes tips the scales in a game that you would expect to be close.
The Bills, if anything, last night, maybe with the exception of the two turnovers, efficient in many areas. Completion percentage, getting off the field on third down on defense. Punt return, 5 for 49, as you had mentioned earlier when we were off the air, by Stevenson in his debut performance. And then there's this one. 4 penalties for 35 yards.
Yeah.
It's the lowest penalty total in about 5 weeks.
They negated the two turnovers of Josh Allen because they stopped him twice on fourth down as well. So it's kind of a 50-50 proposition. Yeah. So they kind of came out even in the first half, even with two turnovers.
So you really hope that consistency of play continues into a second week in a giant divisional game. That's it for us. Enjoy your holiday weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.